Hello and welcome to Penny Earful, the officially unofficial podcast for Showtime's Penny Dreadful, brought to you by BaldMove.com. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Tonight we're talking about episode 303,
Good and Evil Braided Bee.
Just like the stereo effect you got. What the fuck is going on? What do you think of this episode?
I loved this episode. I thought it was so good. I was screaming at some points.
Does it feel like things are maybe too interconnected on the show?
No. I feel like I said maybe the first or second episode where I said that it felt like it worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And in this episode, we have Lily hearkening back to when she was with, what's his name, Ethan?
Mm-hmm.
I guess she was Brona.
He was Ethan, she was Brona.
Right. It seems like that's going to come up again if he ever makes his way back. And then we have just out and out Caliban being the orderly. And neither of them having memory of it?
Well, it makes sense for him not to.
Does it?
Yeah, because his memories are
slowly coming back. Exactly. So I feel like that will be something that comes with it eventually.
And, like, is the implication that she killed him?
I don't know.
She ripped open his skull or something?
She very could well have.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, because they had an almost meet cute in this episode. I guess it wouldn't be it'd be a re-meet cute, where he saw her in Chinatown and got a nice smile on his face, and then found that she was there with her beau, and still seems like he's happy for her.
Yeah,
like there's it's always amazing to me that this Caliban John Clare guy can continue to sip from the milk of human kindness. Like there's a guy who was perfectly nice to him on the way to England. Or mm-hmm. on the way to London, and he, you know, like with the first person that was slightly rude to him, he grabs by the head and threatens to rip it off if he doesn't tell him what he needs to know. Like,
right?
Maybe. But then again, he's kind of a monster, and people treat him that way a lot. So I don't know. He's a complicated guy. But anyway, what I want to say about this interconnected thing is like I keep on debating in my mind as like. These people kind of coincidentally keep knowing each other and be connected. But I'm like, well, this is like the entire supernatural community of London. It would be strange if they weren't connected in some way.
I suppose so.
Like, it's not coincidence if you actually have forces beyond your control manipulating things, you know?
Right.
Like that hand waves a lot of my objections away.
Yeah, I mean, but also at the same time, we're finding out with each episode that it just goes deeper than we think.
Mm-hmm.
There's this network of underground vampires, which very much look like vampires, but I've got some really interesting feedback about that.
Okay.
Do you want to get just right into it?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Up front, you want to talk about Ethan / K-Tane and Malcolm and Hecate's storyline?
Sure.
Ethan has another dream vision, and he awakens to Hecate in a stable, and she wants to follow him around. K-Tane later says that, or he asks Malcolm about the scarred, bald woman, something to that effect.
Branded, scarred.
So I take it that they are having continued dream vision communications with each other.
Yeah, it's mostly just K-Tane sneaking up to him on dream and screaming at him with his face covered in blood. Just really,
you're the Apache I need. Who is that lady?
Are you cheating on me, Ethan?
Yeah, K-Tane gets to deal with some good old-fashioned racism. Why was that scene in there?
To establish that, you know, Malcolm is awesome and not a piece of shit, I think.
Right.
Which I don't know. I enjoyed seeing my heroes do heroic things. That's the thing. K-Tane didn't need him to step up.
I was expecting a really cliched dialogue afterwards where K-Tane says, I don't need you to defend me. And he says, and Malcolm says something like, I wasn't doing it for you. I was doing it to spare them.
That's what I, because when he was talking about,
so many times.
When he's essentially threatening him with what a dangerous man he is, I'm like, well, he might be talking about K-Tane because that dude is also a very dangerous man that you don't want to just fuck with. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the implication I got, is that K-Tane would have done away with those guys handily.
Sure, he didn't need Malcolm's defense. But I think it was, I'm not even sure if it's appreciated, because K-Tane's entire response was, and then Malcolm's was, raise eyebrows. But
yeah.
I feel like it's amazing, because Timothy Dalton, I mean, he just brings it in every scene.
Oh, yeah. He's so great.
And that's like sometimes I like to step back and like, God damn, this show about gothic monsters has Timothy Dalton and Ava Green in it.
Amazing.
And Josh Hartnett.
Amazing.
Yeah. These guys are really good.
Yeah. That is an understatement. So Ethan and what's her name? Hecate steal horses and kill the family. And you see that Ethan is not really protesting too much. He's not taking part in it, but
yeah,
he's not saying, what the hell are you doing?
Well, he's it's funny. He's like, do you see this land? It has no mercy, and neither do I. Smash cut to him like, okay, let's have a little bit of mercy. Do we need to kill everyone that we meet?
Right.
What did you think she meant about when there's bodies from horizon to horizon and you can step across them without touching the ground, then you can cry?
I think she's implying that she's seen some shit and he's got nothing to cry about.
Well, I also think because this is like, you know, the whole Wolf of God and Lupus Day.
Yeah.
And they're trying to bring about some kind of end times, maybe, because that's, you know, literally like the landscape covered in corpses and the land overflowing with blood is almost like a biblical thing. That's
right.
Like a revelation prophecy. I wonder if they're trying to, if they're trying to suggest that.
I don't know my Bible like you do, so I'm going to defer to your...
And I might just have Bible in my brain because there is an interesting thread about how in the latest Game of Thrones there was a lyrical structure to a letter to someone wrote that had come and see, which is something that the angels were saying in the Book of Revelations when they kept opening the seven seals. Every time they'd open one and whoa would happen and they'd say come and see. So I just got the Bible in my brain lately.
Huh, interesting. So she's working him, and I think that it's slowly winning him over. And then Kay Tanae outright says that it's a battle for his soul at this point. Either they're going to find him and save him, or they're going to have to find him or kill him.
Which makes me think that this isn't necessarily a rational thing with him, that it's... Because I want to say, like, man, this seems like a little too quick. He knows who this woman is. He's had dealings with her and her kind before.
Who? Are you talking
Hecate.
About Ethan?
Yeah, and Ethan.
Yeah.
What the hell is he doing? Why is he trusting her?
But his last experience with them is him being forced into this tunnel where he had to kill a trusted friend.
Sure.
And that's your last experience with these people.
Yeah.
I get it. She got you out of a tight spot, but... Did she really, or would he have just killed all those people and run away?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, this whole battle for his soul makes me think that this is not entirely of his own doing. Like, there are, you know, it's like the dark side seductiveness.
His forces at work, we don't understand.
Sure,
exactly.
My father, my Indian father, my Apache father, taught me that there were things like that in this TV show.
So the inspector's hot on their tail this whole time. He's investigating the bar crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
And Kay Tanae and Malcolm find the family, which means that even though they showed up later, they're way ahead of the inspector, Rusk.
Mm-hmm.
Kay Tanae and Malcolm have the same sentiment that Ethan expresses to Hecate at one point. They say, once you hit the desert, you don't stop until you get where you're going. So next episode, I think we're going to speed up to meeting his father.
Probably.
Or
and that's that might explain some of his fatalism, too, that he's on a mission. And if she helps him, then when he is accomplishing that mission and sets things right with his father, whatever that means, then maybe he'll deal with her. But
what kind of time clock are you putting on Inspector Rusk's life? Because with this many forces at work, he's not going
to
win.
Especially since he's now ready to dabble in the occult. So I don't know. I don't know. He's an interesting fellow.
I didn't think he'd make it out of last season, honestly.
Also, he made a big deal about how he can write and shoot. And then this episode, it's all, inspectors from Scotland Yard don't carry firearms. We're British. I'm like, well, fatherfucker, what are you making a big deal about your riding and shooting ability for?
Well, you've seen
Carry
Downton
a gun.
Abbey. They can ride horses and shoot at what is it, ducks?
But I'm saying, like, when you tell the U.S. Marshal in the first episode, I can ride and shoot and handle rough terrain, and then...
Oh, they're just measuring dick sizes, isn't that
I can only do two of those three at once. Like, I can't shoot and... I can ride and handle rough terrain, but I can't shoot. It's
Yeah, he's trying to show that he's the bigger man because he can do it. He just chooses not to. So that's why he's a better person. He's such a good person.
If he has an inkling that he's hunting a werewolf and he's seen what what Ethan's capable of doing, it doesn't make sense that he's not armed.
Well, he's got like 9 guys to stand in front of him.
Yeah, and there was like 16 guys laying in bloody bits that were armed at the saloon, so...
That's true.
Yeah.
What else do we have about them... Oh, the last thing I have is that Hecate wants to free him and rule darkness by his side. But that's all I've got on that storyline. Anything else from you?
No. And I guess I would like more of a reaction to that.
Right.
It's like, well, you know, if I wanted a woman to rule beside me in darkness, it'd probably be Vanessa.
Right.
And, you know, I'm rethinking the
decisions. And he's a bit touchy about Vanessa when she brings her up.
Sure. Yeah, he doesn't like him talking about Bay.
Nope. So then we just get
You know, when she gets back to he gets back to England, she's going to like smell the witch on him and be like, "You better go call Hecate with the good hair."
I was going to do another Beyonce reference, tell him boy bye, but that one's much better. So the next thing we have is, real quick, Dr. Jekyll and Frankenstein.
Sure.
They didn't get much screen time this episode, but Jekyll's definitely losing it, right?
There's a little bit of Hyde showing through.
What's that about? Is he experimenting on himself, or does he have the same insanity problems as everyone else that's locked up in there?
Oh, and everyone else in the show? I know. I definitely think that's the implication that he is, because Frankenstein talked about what a violent temper he had back in school, and a little bit of that is showing through here. So I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I don't know if he has experimented himself or wants to experiment on himself, and whether Frankenstein's electricity modification of his formula,
right, where the marriage of the electricity and the potions meet, is that when we're going to start experimenting on Jekyll?
Yeah, that we'll start to see Hyde. He'll like, oh wow, you can. I mean, they'll cure a guy, and then he'll decide, oh, I'm going to take this myself, because you can tell that he doesn't like the duality of himself. This braided bee bullshit is not working for him. So he kind of wants to just to be the full time angel.
What else should we talk about? How about the Lily and Dorian Gray storyline?
Yeah, Lily, I really liked all the scenes that she had with her new little submissive,
Justine, I guess. Justine's working for me.
Is that what her name is, Justine? Yeah, I like that. I find, I don't usually go in for the girl-girl stuff, but I'm totally into this arrangement.
Yeah, I remember watching this with you, and early on in the episode, you said, I'd like to see them get together, and boy, did you get it.
Yeah, and even with a bonus Dorian Gray. But, like, I mean, we're only, like, a few acts into it, and it's still a better love story than 50 Shades of Grey. there is something about the power dynamic that's pretty hot. I like the fact that they saw the suffragette movement.
Yeah.
And how that's, like, the flashy, showy way to get your way.
Right, and they prefer to hunt by night and
do things slowly,
slay in the shadows,
and acquire your power.
Beyonce reference.
I thought that's all good, and it's also interesting. Like, that's historical a fact. Do you remember a couple months ago in the board game subreddit, someone had dug up the rules to a 1914 edition of the game Suffragette,
and you can't find it anywhere.
Well, no, of course not. But they've got.
But you think they'd reprint something interesting like that?
Well, I mean, the theme is you're a team of suffragettes trying to get into, I think, the parliamentary house, either to protest or to have a meeting, and you square off against a team of policemen who are trying to stop you, and as you capture pieces, they go to the hospital. So, like, the flavor is that these British bobbies are just womping suffragette ass for the temerity for asking for the right to vote.
Right.
I thought that was It's interesting to see all this violence against women who are just asking for like a say in government contrasted with, you know, Lily and what did you say her name was?
Justine.
Justine's kind of quest for a different. Not, she doesn't want equality. She wants mastery.
Yes. And who can blame her?
A new ushering in a new dom or new era of female domination.
We're still working on it, Lily. Even today. In joke, does Justine remind you of Sam's Club Girl?
Sam's Club Girl?
Yeah. The sample lady?
Oh, not anywhere near.
No?
No.
She's got an air of
I guess fuck maybe me with daddy a cockney voice about her. But, I mean, she's just like, you know, do you want to try this cracker? I mean, it's pretty extreme.
It is extreme, but that's just what it reminds me of. There's okay. Also an episode of 30 Rock where they kind of tackle that subject.
Well, how old do you think Justine is? Like,
she's kind of 16, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like she's certainly underage. And also, you were right. That was a snuff club.
Yeah, I was.
I was surprised to hear that, but I guess not too shocked.
I mean, yeah, it was all there on screen.
Yeah, my just thing is, like,
she was too strong to be a victim.
Yeah, and it seems like this area of Victorian England is, like sensationalism. Like, they like to be scared by the dark things. Like you know, none of that stuff in the Wax Museum was real, except for, I guess, the final exhibit of John Clare. But, you know what I mean? Like, that's something they did. They liked that, you know, this was the era of Penny Dreadful.
Right, they had wax museums, and now we have Reddit.
Sure.
It's something that people are just curious about. We have subreddit Watch People
Die, if you wow. want to get into that thing.
So...
That is essentially a back alley snuff film, except for absolutely. It's all the time, real life, 100%.
Absolutely.
Not a place I like to hang out.
No.
Too innocent.
Can we just take a quick...
Too innocent die.
Quick break so that I can throw up. Okay. And we're back.
Palate cleanser.
So, they're... Oh. I can't skip this scene. Of course, they bring the victim, the same guy who took their money coming into the snuff place. In case you don't recognize him. And they butcher him.
Mm-hmm.
Justine doesn't need to be talked into it. She just goes to town.
How Dorian's like midway through his pitch and she just grabs a knife and like he's like, oh, what? You weren't supposed to kill him. There's like this whole thing.
No, that's not what we were getting at.
No. Like, first, you're just going to cut his breast off. And then we work you up, but okay, I guess you're ready to graduate.
All right, yeah. I just have an issue with this fucking and blood scene because that's not how blood works. Blood it's coagulates quickly. It's visually interesting,
but that would be such a sticky, gross mess within like 30 seconds.
It would be
much
more dry than it would be wet.
Yeah.
Just saying. Yeah. So that was a problem for me. As a person who encounters blood every month on the regular. It's
your moon's blood?
My moon's blood. It's an issue for me, but... Whatever, it was sexy and scary, and isn't that all we want?
It was visually arresting. And, one of my favorite scenes from last season was they were doing the dance when Vanessa was getting, mind-fucked by the witches, and she sees them doing these elegant waltzes, and just blood starts pouring in from the ceiling, and everything's slowly covered in blood, and the ladies' dresses are just making swirling patterns in it. The show does blood really well.
Yeah, it's incredible. So their plan is to build an empire and an army of soldiers, of fallen women. Definitely not suffragettes. Not allowed, though.
Mm. Well, you know, you might be able to recruit from the suffragette office. get the more fire brandy ones.
Yeah. So that's all I've got on them this week.
Do you think are they going to imbue them with any kind of powers?
I mean,
she's just a
Dorian Gray just has consequence-free actions.
Because of his painting. And she's
Lily's just dead, which I'm not sure what that means for her and Caliban. Does that mean they're immortal? Does that mean that
it seems like
they
it.
Can't get hurt or
it seems
sick?
Like they're impervious to pain, cold, well, not emotional pain. That's all fucking
right, that's all
John
they
Clare
feed
could
on.
Feel.
Yeah.
But they seem to be impervious to cold, pain. They're super strong, or at least, you know, strong as three or four men.
Right.
Caliban literally ripped a man in half.
He did.
In the first season.
Stuck his arm right through him and ripped him in half.
Yep. Ripped him open like a phone book. Even easier than a phone book. Like a rotten melon. What's something you rip open?
You rip open? I don't know. A King's Hawaiian roll.
Ripped him open like a King's Hawaiian roll.
And then buttering him up.
Thanks for the assist. I needed that.
You're welcome. So speaking of Caliban, he is heading home, reminiscing of his son, and meets a very nice stranger, but seems accosted. And this shot, even though it may not be real, is quite beautiful.
Which
over,
one?
Over
oh,
the hill
yeah.
in the carriage.
Yeah, overlooking London.
Yep.
Although
so,
London looked much less like a hellhole than it does at other, like, you know, anytime they show commerce on the River Thames, anytime they show, like, the factory, like, it's just belching black smoke.
It's terrible.
And,
it's just like Les Mis and Sweeney Todd. You
yeah,
just get that.
Just
it's
filthy. They're throwing shit and piss in the streets. And yeah. It's not as romantic as when.
And they're throwing out racism, says I.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Should build a wall around England, says I. Make England great again.
So he returns to his hometown, back to the apartment where he left his wife and son. Presumably that's where they were last time he was there. And this is where he sees Vanessa with Dr. Sweet. He goes to the apartment and he gets a tour of the inside. And this is why I hate him.
Mm-hmm.
He goes from zero to unnecessarily violent against this obstinate man who is infuriating, but that doesn't give you a right to just assault a person.
I agree, but I'm starting
why
to
why don't you just turn around and say, my wife and son lived here. I would like to find them, please.
Sure. And that I got in a horrific...
You catch more flies with honey than vinegar.
I agree. The guy's a bit of a chode, and also I think that they've established... I used to wonder about him going back and forth, too, but now I think this is not just a choice he makes. I think there's something about his brain chemistry that he... Just like Lily, he has a hard time controlling his impulses and his anger. So that's why he can be like quiet and meek as a lamb one moment, and the next he's just boiling over.
What part of Lily makes you think she's not in control?
That's a good point.
I haven't seen any
well,
behaviors
I'm just saying that,
that make me think that she hasn't done anything deliberately
yeah,
or without plotting it.
But I'm just saying that like it's a little extreme to butcher people. Like, I know that she's got good reasons and she was used
well,
by
sure,
men.
Sure, but.
I'm saying this like a hand wavy voice, but I don't.
Right, but you can name any serial killer in history and those people did not just snap and kill once. These people are meticulous and plotted and just butchering people is just what they thought was right.
Hmm. I guess I'm only saying that because if that's what Dr. Frankenstein plans to do, like.
This is going to backfire spectacularly.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because it's not like. She has a sweet side and an evil side. She has a side that's just pissed off at men, and that's who she is. And even if she was calm and calculating, or I guess even if she was calm and compliant about... I mean, what does that even look like? A woman that hates all men, but is composed about it? You can
I
see,
just gestured
you can
it
see
myself.
This, but she did the, like, you know, Vanna White showcase, like, with of her own person. Like, have you considered me?
No, that's not true. But
am I your Ethan?
I mean, I think that Caliban's got a different kind of problem, or they haven't shown us that Lily is having issues with her personality.
Okay. I'm just saying I wonder if it's a thing. And, of course, I got to remember that even if I'm wrong about that, Lily was the third generation creation, so she's the best one. It could just be that he's got some kind of emotional... Well, I mean, you know he doesn't have access to his memories.
Oh,
so.
Definitely. But, I mean, just like any child who's abused, as soon as he was brought to life... Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the most terrifying things that sticks with me in this show, or one of the things that just affected me the most, was that scene of him on that table just screaming naked.
Mm-hmm.
That disturbed me deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So... Like I said, just like if you're an abused child, your formative years are just wrought with this pain and misery.
Sure.
So maybe that is what helped him develop these emotional issues. What do I know?
I mean, most of the reason I don't like him is because he killed Prometheus or whatever his fucking name, Adam.
Proteus.
Proteus, that's
what
it was. He killed Proteus, who I really was enjoying right when he was becoming interesting. He killed Van Helsing. Like, he killed a lot of dudes that I liked in the early going. Plus, he was just a massive asshole, and the whole plot to snuff out and then recreate Lily, and the image that they wanted was distasteful. There's a whole lot of reasons I don't like him.
Right, and you can see that same point I was making, why Lily hates men so much, is that as she's gaining her memories back, she's got these two guys fighting over who's going to keep her and control her.
It's
gross.
Yeah, it's a bad scene.
So, yes, I understand what you're saying. So
I can understand what Lily's going through because I've hated a television character once. And it's basically the same thing.
You've hated a television character?
Several.
Who?
Yeah.
Well, oh, you're just saying you have.
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he, presumably he does get the forwarding address of his family, goes to this hellhole.
He at least tracks down where she's working.
Working, maybe?
She's working at, got a factory job.
It seems like he knew exactly where her apartment was, though.
Hmm.
He stands outside the factory. He looks at
Is she living in the factory?
No.
Okay.
He's outside the factory. He looks at this communal building.
Because this building
And there's people, bathing outside. He looks right up at the top floor window. He knows where he's going.
Okay. Because he's got... This building is a horror show.
Yeah. He goes right to her door, but decides not to knock or say anything. But instead... climb up through the hole in the roof that people often use because that's why the pole's there, right?
I imagine.
What would you call that? What would you call that piece of wood that he got up?
A two-by-four.
Two-by-four.
Mm-hmm. But, that's a whole rat nest up there, and there's holes in the ceiling, and he's peering on them. Like, I kept on expecting the little boy to be like, look, Mommy, Daddy's up in the ceiling looking at us. he's right there.
Man, wouldn't that have been arresting, though, if he had said something
like... started sobbing up in the ceiling?
No, if the little boy said, I see Daddy or I see the ghost of Daddy or something like that, and the mom was, just trying to soothe him, but he was actually seeing him there, and then the boy died.
Yeah, it's dark.
I don't know. That would have worked
show. The plot here is that she can barely afford to keep food on the table and to keep them...
And the boy is dying of consumption?
Something that he needs medicine for, and that's why Jean-Claire begins his life as pickpocket and thief.
Begins? Well, he seemed like an old salt at it.
Well, he just essentially is like
a bigger,
strong... He
just mugs a random guy for a watch, and what was on top of... What was it sitting on top of?
I think it was British pounds. No, there was... Those are money.
It was a piece of paper.
It's money.
Was it?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, I didn't...
Pound sterling.
Closely enough, I guess. Another stray observation. The woman has very short hair. I assume she sold it at some point.
Because
that's a thing to do for money.
Yep.
So short of prostitution, which is your last resort for money, she's now got a gold pocket watch.
That was the ironic thing. He stole her a silver hairbrush.
No, it would be ironic is if she goes to sell this watch and they arrest her for stealing.
Oh, fuck.
Right?
The other thing is this boy, there's I also thought maybe that this is a lice problem because the boy's got a really shoddy haircut, even in the flashbacks.
I'm pretty sure everyone had lice back then.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we had to hack his hair off because he had lice or because, I don't know, they're trying to keep the
consumption kids'
spreading.
Hair utilitarian.
But no, you're probably right. She probably sold her hair.
Yeah.
She's doing she's halfway through the, wasn't Cosette, it's the other one on God damn it, Les Mis. I've all forgotten my shit.
I know.
But she's halfway through the, selling her hair, and then her teeth, and then her body, and that's what's next.
Yeah.
You think Jean-Claire's going to see that? She's seeing gentlemen?
While her son's dying between the curtain.
Oh, it's like a Rorschach deal from... Watchmen, huh?
Well, what's she gonna do? Go to some hotel or...
You just have sex standing up in the street the way everyone does in this fucking show.
I guess you're right.
Did you notice that we had yet another upright vertical sex scene when they're all communing in blood? They're just all standing in the middle and on their...
No,
on their...
they were just kissing. There was a lot of different
okay.
sex going on there.
Fair enough. The rare non-upright sex scene in Penny Dreadful.
Right. So, ready to move on to Vanessa's main storyline?
If she is hooking on the side, that also ties into the Dracula plot, because we know that, I don't know if we knew, but when Renfield was attacked, they killed that prostitute as well. So this could be a way for all these plots to intersect.
I feel like she was just...
I know.
An obstacle.
I'm running wild.
You are running wild.
I need an injection and some electricity. Do you have any?
Yes, just wait until we get home.
You got any more of that direct current, man?
So Renfield is going full on insaner. He's writing just Vanessa, Vanessa, Vanessa over and over in the notebook, and eventually eats a fly, as we know.
Mr. Vanessa Ives. Mr. Vanessa Ives. He's practicing as when they get married.
Perfect.
That's a canonical Renfield thing to do. He's right. Obsessed with eating life. So, you know, flies and bugs.
Exactly.
And
he thinks that will sustain him.
Brings him closer to the master.
So Dr. Seward is not quite believing Vanessa, but doesn't want to outright tell her that she thinks she's crazy. So she's doing a doctor thing. Well, Vanessa convinces her by grabbing her hands and doing a light skin reading.
Her weird seance thing that she does.
And she's not wrong. I think the doctor is completely convinced. I will say that the last few, what do you call them, previews...
Implied the doctor was going to lock her up. That's something me and Jim have learned a hard lesson over the years, is that those previews lie.
Right, but you think that there's no way to misinterpret her being in a padded room. Well,
but nope,
there
it's just
is.
A flashback for, you know, I mean, we already knew that she went through this experience and she had the forced brain surgery mm-hmm. and all this medical kind of experimentation torture from last season.
So now I'm full of wild speculation about how her and Dr. Seward, now that Dr. Seward is a little bit closer to believing her and being on her side, they're going to fight evil together. It's got me all hot and bothered.
Yeah, and I'm also this connection to the cut wife that Vanessa learned witchcraft from. I mean, what is that about? I mean, that definitely implies that they're going to ally in some way as well.
And she does have the same personality. She's very harsh
I thought it's funny that, you know, Vanessa's like, I'm just like, you know, your old friends, like, minus the kindness. I'm like, what? I saw season two, Vanessa. Come on. She eventually warmed up to you.
Eventually.
She eventually started treating you like a daughter, but it was pretty, pretty harsh initial hazing.
Right. So Vanessa and Sweet Cula get to know each other. He reveals that he has...
I was like, who the fuck is Sweet Cula?
Dr. Sweet Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet Cula.
Sweet Cula is what you would do.
Sweet Cula. He reveals that he has a wife. It's been dead about a year. And you have an interesting theory about this. I mean, it's Dracula lore,
the thing. Like, this is not... I don't think it's
where in the book Dracula
and in the adaptation,
Mina was a reincarnation of his dead wife.
Yeah.
Mina's dead. So maybe Vanessa could fill this role.
Mm-hmm.
And you think he's talking about her.
Oh, I do. I mean,
being much like his dead wife.
That's the thing, like, who knows what they're borrowing and who knows what they're not borrowing, but that's what I'm assuming until I see otherwise. Which has gotten me in trouble plenty on the show.
So now we get the answer to why those vampires are still following Dr. Sweet around, or Dracula, is without his approval.
Which...
He's got his sights set on something and they also want... to move in.
Boy, the setup of this scene makes no sense.
It doesn't.
I want to say that the Hall of Mirrors was super cool.
Amazing.
And I'm amazed that I don't know how they filmed that, because you'd think it would be a nightmare trying to keep the camera out of the scene. But Dracula, who's the master, wanders off and his acolyte pairs off her to this side little room. You'd think that if Dracula didn't want this to happen, he'd just put the kibosh on that shit. So I assume that Dracula, you know, had his minion do this to further some kind of mindfuck purpose with Vanessa.
Exactly.
Then you find out at the end of the episode that this guy was acting on his own free will and Dracula's furious with him. So it's like, that doesn't make sense, because doesn't Dracula have control of these people? And if
he
not,
does,
he certainly
he
could...
calls that guy away at the end of the scene where he's threatening Vanessa.
Yeah, like, was he just momentarily lapse of vampire awareness here?
Did he figure out what was going on once he lost track of Vanessa?
I don't know. It was very confusing to me when we got to the end where, you know, Dracula fed him to his wild boys.
Yeah. It's just making a... he's making an example of him, but
Do you think he wanted him to do that? No. As I say, I was trying to think if there's room for an explanation that he wanted him to do it, but then when it didn't work or it blew up in his face, he was pissed off about it and looking for a scapegoat. But no, he made it pretty clear that that guy was kind of doing his own operation.
Right, and he gives her some really interesting information that maybe Dr. Sweet wouldn't have wanted her to have.
At this juncture.
Right, that he's... They've met before in the white room where there is no time.
Mm-hmm.
Is Dr. Sweet also
with the
Dr.
other? With the other. That was the other important part of the
Is the other statement. Caliban is what I took it as.
I think so, yeah.
So is Dr. Sweet Dr. Banning?
Dr. Sweet Dr. Banning. Who the
Dr.
fuck
Dr. Banning's the guy who trapped her in there and did all those tests on her with the hallucinogens and the... And the trepanning.
I would say no, except for they're both doctors, and I didn't see the Dr. Sweet thing coming, so I'm just going to bet on your horse
until
it loses.
If he took out the part of her brain that remembers, I don't know.
Yeah, he took out the vampire memory center of her brain.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't remember
right there next to Boca's region.
She doesn't remember Caliban either.
Well, does she... Or just does Caliban look so different and she's traumatized that she's repressed? No.
I mean, they've had a lot of close interaction and talks together.
My thing with Caliban is I don't understand why he doesn't shave his fucking head and then go say hi to his wife and kids.
He's terrifying. He's dead.
He's not that terrifying.
If you were dead and then you came back with your face all fucked up and you were 10
it's
shades...
It's not even that fucked
and
up.
And you were 10 shades lighter and you had this long stringy hair...
He looks
I
like
probably,
he's going to a Marilyn Manson concert. Like
Yeah, if you were going to a Marilyn Manson concert... You probably wouldn't be welcome back.
His son doesn't look... Fair point. But his son doesn't even look that much better. Like, he's almost as pale and gaunt and, you know...
It's not a good
ravaged.
Idea.
Ravaged. I think that's the way to go.
I think he's...
This is Deadpool the movie all over again. Like, just fucking sit down and talk. These are your loved ones. And maybe he's waiting for all of his memory to come back. I don't know.
Okay. I think he is too far gone to be a part of their life anymore.
Hmm.
Is my opinion.
Probably true. But you'll never know. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Caliban.
Is that the same?
Why are we calling
him
Caliban? Isn't his like?
I don't know.
Isn't that
name.
Like his Frankenstein name? His slave name? Wouldn't like John Clare the thing that he's adopted for himself? I noticed that like people are calling him that on the forums and in feedback kind of interchangeably. But I always thought like John Clare is it's like calling Lily Brona at this point.
Right. We've done a lot of both.
Huh.
So she goes back to Dr. Seward and she requires hypnotism to bring her memories back. The doctor is not really interested, but is talked into it readily.
And it's not that she's not interested, it's that she's afraid of the result to Vanessa. She's in too fragile a state.
But she does it anyway, so she's not that afraid. And she hypnotizes her back to the white padded room where... Which, again, a really awesome scene of Vanessa talking to modern-day Dr. Seward, who's in the room with her. I just thought that was really well done. And Caliban is the orderly that brings her food.
And seems like he's... Like, I thought then they're going to set this up. There's this horrific realization that maybe Caliban was this... you know, kind of monster, and maybe they'll still do that. But I got in the 3 seconds of the screen time when my mind wasn't exploding that he seemed, on subsequent watch, it seems like he was pretty genteel. Like, I've got your food, Miss Ives, or whatever he said. He wasn't being a complete asshole about it.
That's all I've got this week. I thought this was a fantastic episode, if I didn't say it already. Do you have anything else? I've got a ton of feedback to
okay,
get here.
Okay, so I feel like we did a good first coat. Let's see, you know, yeah. You got to do a lot. Let's see what if the listeners can give us a second one.
First off, we've got a new, maybe not a new listener.
If you want to send feedback, pennyearful@baldmove.com and on the forums, forums.baldmove.com, proceed.
Maybe not a new listener, but a very new writer-inner.
Okay.
Emailer, Kelly. She's got...
First time, long time.
First time, long time. She's
indeterminate
got
time.
She's got a lot of hot takes here, so bear with me.
Okay.
This is in reference to Kate and A. I was wondering if the show will reveal he is Geronimo. There are lots of coincidences that seem to point to Geronimo legend. First of all, the timing is right. Geronimo was born in 1829, died in 1909. the first episode establishes we're in 1892, the same year Tennyson died. That would make Geronimo 63, which is about how old Keitane looks.
Okay.
Second, Keitane describes himself as Chiricahua Apache. Guess who is also Chiricahua?
Geronimo.
You got it. Thirdly, Keitane seems to inspire mixed reactions from his own people. The woman who was his relative did not argue with Ethan that he was an old demon. Geronimo inspired mixed reactions among his own people. Some found him to bring only trouble, while others followed him into battle.
Hmm.
Number four. Keitane shows himself to be strong in some kind of magical arts. He finds Malcolm, talks to Ethan across thousands of miles, and seems to be able to divine the future. Geronimo was also believed to possess the power to see the future and also the power to know events that happened far away. Fifth, Keitane's family was killed in some kind of horrific way, implying that Ethan had something to do with this. Geronimo also had his family murdered in 1851 by the Mexican militia. Keitane's story differs from Geronimo's, but the show often twists to suit its plot. Sixth, Keitane is a badass fighter and hunter. The scene of him rescuing Malcolm is proof of that. Geronimo was a legendary hunter from a young age. She's a Geronimo expert.
Hmm.
He also was a legendary fighter who resisted Mexican and American forces for years. Added up, these things seem to be more than a little bit coincidental. It also makes a lot of sense that if Keitane is Geronimo, he might be very interested in finding Ethan and perhaps making him pay some kind of blood debt. I know that I would love to have a werewolf on my side if I was going to take revenge of some kind. Has Keitane foreseen something that makes Ethan essential in the fight against evil?
My big problem with this is Geronimo's most famous for jumping out of airplanes, and airplanes have not been invented yet.
It's not true.
No?
No.
I'm a little shaky on my Native American history. No, that's, I mean, shit, I didn't know all of that, and that seems like a pretty good genetic match. Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of hoping they explore other Native American myths, like either like something with the Wendigo, which I know is not exactly the right part of the country, but there's also the like Nagalashi, I think is how you pronounce it. The skinwalkers, the creatures that can you know, essentially shift shape at will, not just like a werewolf, but they can assume any shape.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if they were going to get a little bit out of the Victorian box. Since they're in the American Southwest, it seems like a great way to continue to bend the genres. But I like the Geronimo theory.
Yeah.
Why would he not be going by Geronimo?
I don't know. Why would Caliban go by John Clare?
Because Caliban is his bullshit name that his creator gave him.
Why would Brona go by Lily?
Same difference. I mean, these are all like the characters.
Why would Dr. Banning go by Dr. Sweet, go by Dracula?
Well, it's Dr. Acula.
Dr. Acula.
That was what he started off. He's like, no, that's too obvious. It's way too obvious.
Dr. Acula. Ooh. Okay. Kelly continues. This is actually a second email with and a lot of interesting
more
theories.
Geronimo facts?
Nope.
Okay.
Justine facts.
Oh.
Which I think you'll like after your watch of Quill. This year? Last year?
The thing was early last year? Yeah.
Justine is the title of a famous work of Marquis de Sade, whose name sadism was coined. Justine has an accompanying book entitled Juliet, and the books follow two sisters who make very different life choices. Justine's life is one disaster after another. She's continually taken advantage of sexually and financially. Each time she tries to make a virtuous choice, she finds herself committing depraved acts to stay alive. She continues to spiral from one desperate choice to another until found by her sister Juliet. Juliet rescues her from poverty and prison. Juliet, in contrast to Justine, does not pursue virtue. She is an amoral nymphomaniac and a murderer.
Ah, Marquis de Sade.
Seduced at a young age by a number of older women, she does not believe in religion or morality. A woman named Claire Will finds her, and together they murder men and boys as revenge for brutality against their sex. She even gets involved in a plot to bring famine and disease to half the population of France. The Marquis de Sade presents the virtuous Justine as the one who should be mocked and the amoral Juliet as the example. Justine ends up sad and dies. Juliet ends up happy. I think perhaps the character of Justine in the show will undergo a change. She seemed to be a frightened, naive girl when we first saw her. Perhaps we shall learn her backstory of attempting to be virtuous before she was tricked into prostitution or something along those lines.
I mean, that's the thing. When you're 12 years old, I don't think you're tempted to do shit.
No.
Like, I mean, I granted, this is the turn of the century and people grew up faster, yada, yada, yada. But still, like, that's the only problem I see with that theory is that that's entirely too young to be setting on any kind of life course.
Exactly. I think the under the tutelage of Lily, she will become Juliet, no longer clinging to any kind of morality. Together, they will bring bloody vengeance to the wronged women of Victorian England and the proto-Beyoncés of Penny Dreadful. That's hilarious. I didn't know that Beyoncé reference was in there, but very apropos.
I know. It's almost like she's using dark magic to read our minds. Someone fetch me a new wax cylinder. I need to talk about this.
Thank you, Kelly, for writing in. Those are very interesting. That's
super cool historical analysis. The kind of stuff that the writers of the show seem to get off on.
Yeah,
gotta get in, get off, and get out.
Gretelby writes in, I like that they're just trolling mythology at this point. What do you think would happen if Dr. Acula walked into the House of Mirrors? Nothing, apparently. His reflection was fine. I hope Dr. Sweet and Vanessa's next date takes place in a garlic shop to keep the joke running.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Vampire lore is all over the place. And even, like, if you want to consider, like, the Bram Stoker stuff as canon, he was kind of cherry picking from the old school vampire myths and revenant myths of the Middle Ages. So you look at the historical vampire, what a person, you know, circa the Black Death would think of in terms of a vampire, and it would essentially be like a bloated corpse with really long fingernails and blood red teeth, and it would look gaunt and it would make a whole bunch of hideous noise. It wouldn't mm-hmm. be a smooth, suave, sexual predator.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that myth has always been kind of an ever-changing thing.
Right.
And kind of like what we see with the modern-day zombies, how many different takes on zombies there, and like what is the canonical zombie? Is it what,
is
you know,
it that they crave brains or...
Yeah,
just
they
any
move
kind
fast,
of flesh,
move slow, are they dead, are they infected? Like, right. what is the actual real vampire? Is it what George Romero came up with? Is it what the, you know, its origins in the Caribbean and African, like, mm-hmm. voodoo magic cultures? Like, who owns... So I don't know whether he's saying he's got a problem with that or just that the show is poking fun that, like, oh, you're going to expect the Dracula show up at a House of Mirrors and no reflection.
Yeah, I think the show is just poking fun.
Uh-huh.
He continues, a lot of what the fucks with John Clare. You start feeling for him, then you find out he was part of Vanessa's therapy and possibly has ties with Dr. Acula. By the way, that's how I'm going to say it forever.
Sure.
Now. When Dr. Acula said he lost his wife last year, was he talking about Mina or was he just bullshitting?
Oh, shit. I didn't even realize, because I was assuming, I was going with the immortal beloved kind of thing, that he was just saying a version of the story that Vanessa would comprehend.
Right.
But it would be interesting if Mina was his original wife and that, you know, now he's got his eyes on Vanessa or some permutation of that. Maybe he always wanted Vanessa, but he settled for Mina to get to Vanessa. Like, that
I mean,
would
they
be
seem,
cool.
They just seem so dissimilar, and for her to hate Vanessa so much up until her death.
Well, but that might, I mean, if she was jealous, like if she knew that he was
right, but
was
if he was so
best.
In love with Mina, why would he be drawn to Vanessa now being a polar opposite?
Well, you know, that's he's polyamorous. He's very high-minded.
But I mean,
he's a very high-minded, non-jealous vampire.
I'm saying that the whole story of Dr. Acula is that he's drawn to her because she's a reincarnation.
That's the source material.
That's all I'm saying.
But who knows? They've definitely played old Harry with that mythology already, with Mina dying and Van Helsing being dead and all that stuff. But yeah.
Okay.
No, I was like, that's a brand new thought though. I never thought to take him at his word. But yeah, the timeline certainly adds up.
Mm-hmm. Rennie writes in and says, I literally cannot get enough of Dr. Sweet. I don't even care that he's Dr. Acula. He's just so fascinating to watch, isn't he? When Vanessa walked out of the coffee shop, he looked seriously devastated. None of that obsessive anger, I must have her, that you'd expect and which we've seen on the show from other men. I wonder if he loves her on some level or if it's just a long con.
Well, I mean, you know, episode title is Good and Evil Braided Bee. I don't get him, and this is so weird because I don't get the fascination. I know that you find him very attractive as well. But
I do.
And I'm not the kind of guy's like, oh, I don't understand. I don't know why is guys attractive. That's bullshit, you know? I don't understand. I don't get it.
It's something deep inside of me that I'm not willing to address on this podcast, but I'm a fan.
Okay. Fair enough.
This is the point where our forum listeners get real crazy. Are you ready?
I'm buckled in.
Buckle in, because Rennie continues, am I crazy or does John Clare really look strikingly similar to Dracula's vampire children? The grayish white skin, the yellow eyes, maybe it's just what being undead does to you, but yeah. Lily is not nearly so undead looking, and neither was Proteus. I wonder if this means John was connected to Dracula, or if that's some of Frankenstein's technology did to him.
Well, for point of fact, I think in this episode discovered that they have some connection, because it was the master in the room, it was the master, it was Vanessa, and it was the other.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that Jean-Claire, he's a Frenchman now.
Jean-Claire.
I think that he is going to be the other. So there's already a connection there. Number two, again, he was the Mark One version, and you could see that Frankenstein got better and better at this the more he went along. So I think some of this unnatural pallor is just the result of him being the prototype.
Well, we have more. I think Dracula got Jean-Claire to report on Vanessa, perhaps promising him to heal his son, and he went along with it at first, but tried to intervene later on, and so Dracula killed him. I'm not sure about the whole the master's teeth on your neck in the white room part. Are we supposed to understand that he posed as a doctor orderly at the clinic? Or was he simply sneaking in somehow, maybe with John Clare's help? Either way, if he did indeed see her there, then the whole Dr. Sweet facade is risky business. How can he know she won't recognize him?
All good points.
And I've got another one from El Gato. There is another Claire Dracula connection. The fight with the vampire and the death of Mina at the end of season one occurs at the theater where John Clare worked.
Is that a true fact? Because again, we weren't podcasting the first two seasons, so it's like we've talked about how the attention to detail when you're podcasting and watch it three or four times and reading feedback and taking notes and all that stuff is much greater than when you're just watching as a fan. But that was a like, holy shit, really? Moment for me.
Yeah, we're gonna have to research it after this podcast and before the next, or someone can do it for us in the forums. But they continue, I always thought it was strange that a character like John Clare was always moving around the theaters backstage, would not have noticed a vampire nest. Or was he aware and this information was not shared with the viewer? A final possibility is that the vampire went there with Mina immediately after Clare was fired, just in time for Vanessa to do her echolocation of where they were. However, the timing of that sequence seems very unlikely. To me, that suggests that whatever connection Claire had with Dr. Acula in life has continued in some form after his death.
All I know is there's going to be a whole slew of one-star iTunes reviews. Fucking host didn't even know that the theater was the same as the cells. You know, you got us. I don't know. That's super. I mean, those are a lot of connections there.
Yeah. So I thought that was all very fascinating stuff that I would not have put together on my own. And if we are wrong, it's because I knew better. But that's all the feedbacks we've got. All
right.
What an incredible episode. What an incredible group of listeners we have.
Already. And we're just going to, it's going to get better as the season goes on. Penny Did Earful. You can get in on this. You can give us a Penny Earful at pennyearful@baldmove.com or on forums, forums.baldmove.com. You were saying?
I was going to say, should...
My lady,
pudding pie. Should we tell people that we're going to be eventually backfilling the first two seasons?
Well, our intention is on the off season, we're going to be doing retrospective watches on the seasons one and two, so we can have a full catalog.
Yes.
But I don't know when, because I know that hot on the heels of this, in fact, some of it's going to be during Orange and New Black starts.
I can only assume that we'll be able to get this done maybe on Christmas break or something like that, but before the next season.
I just don't want... Yeah, I don't want to set any promises. That's just our intention. And sometimes...
That's a bald move guarantee. We'll be there and we'll do it.
We'll do it.
We'll have it out next week.
Don't do it. But no, that's definitely our intention, and I just don't know the timing because I know we got to go right to Orange and New Black after we get done with this.
Yes.
Which is going to be... And that's an intense schedule we're trying to do.
I'm down.
Okay. So, yeah. But yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to filling in our knowledge gaps with that. We'll see you again next week for the next episode. It'll be awesome. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Bye.
Bye.